Here we go. It's take three. Thank you very much indeed. It's nice to be a part of your life again because it's very important. It's a very important section.
Don't go changing. I'm going to be eating this pastry during this section.
Are you going to be concentrating though?
Ooh.
Mm. Very nice. Okay, it's a Danish. It's one of those the swirly ones with currants.
Are Danish pastries actually Danish?
No. Well, in Denmark, they're not called Danish pastries. Surprisingly, I think they're called Viennese pastries.
In France, sadomasochism is referred to as la vice anglaise, the English vice.
That's racist on behalf
of the French.
Yeah, what's it got to do with us anyway?
I don't know. So, well, you know, why do we call them French letters?
I think when that is like, are we going to go Dutch? It's you use.
Yeah, but is that a thing in Holland?
No, I think what it is when you. It usually refers to the country with which you are fighting at the time that phrase comes up. If you want to insult the English, which the French have always wanted to do, obviously, then so it doesn't. But I think going Dutch dates to when the English and it was specifically the English, I think, were fighting the Dutch.
Right, but why would going Dutch mean splitting the bill? Because splitting the bill is a good thing.
I'm just saying. Normally, when a country has been attached to a particular habit or practice...
But is the implication that the Dutch aren't manly enough to pick up the whole bill?
Who knows? I don't know. I've never split the bill with a Dutch person.
You should... honestly, the next time you're in Holland...
Is that right?
Please say to somebody, thank you very much.
Thank you. Why are you saying thank you?
Because our stealth ninja, who is wearing a jumper...
We can actually see her, Lily, yes.
Lily often is in the studio dressed in black, and the studio is... But we literally have been in the studio and not known she's in it.
She actually walks the streets of London sort of with a life of crime, helping herself to products and things in shops.
Because she can't be seen.
She can't be seen.
Can't be seen.
So if you're missing anything, chances are it's our Lily. Anyway, the reason for take three is, of course...
No, we'll finish that thing. The next time you're in Holland,
yes,
go out for a meal with a Dutch person and say to them, shall we go Dutch?
See what happens.
See what happens.
Or we get a punch in the face. Let's do this.
Questions.
Andy Wilmington in Northern Ireland, dear Gruber and McLean, long-term Heritage listener, first-time emailer, member of the Vanguard and increasingly absent on social media. Prompted by a mention of Russell Sherman's show, I'd like to gracefully side-skate the interminable debate over whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas film and adopt a more impious approach, the opposite of pious. Okay. Is there a film that you feel captures the seasonal atmosphere of midwinter? And do you feel drawn to such movies at this time of year? I'm more likely to scrabble around my streaming libraries for films like Dr. Zhivago, Force Majeure, or Fargo, if the snow outside is actually...
Force Majeure is a dark choice.
In happier times, I gathered around the digital campfire with the Dark is Reading hashtag, where fans of the uniquely terrifying Susan Cooper novel The Dark is Rising read along together during the winter solstice.
Wow.
Since Twitter is now somewhere where the dark has in fact already risen, I'm delighted to learn BBC World Service, where they have pot cuts, have adapted the book for radio later this month, starring none other than your good friend of the podcast, Toby Jones, who is particularly well-dressed. If only 2007's movie adaptation, The Seeker, had not been so awful. With peace and goodwill, down with the rest, and exhausted though we may be, don't let the idiots win. So is there a question in there? Oh, yes. Okay. Do you feel drawn to seasonal movies of midwinter?
No.
Me neither. I'd rather watch Summer Holiday with Cliff Richard.
And do you know when Summer Holiday was first released in the cinemas?
Christmas, was
Boxing
it?
Boxing Day.
Oh, right.
Actually,
precisely
true.
For that
precisely
reason.
For that reason.
If we want ice and snow and misery, it's out there.
It's out there, yeah.
It's out there.
Sorry. Turn on the radio. It's not getting any better.
Ruthie says, I recently saw the trailer for the new Indiana Jones film.
Indiana Jones.
And I'm worried. The first film I saw in the cinema was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And I've been reminded for the next 35-odd years about my reaction to the bad guy being eaten by alligators. Quote, that deserved him. I cannot think of a film series, apart from maybe Star Trek, that a fifth film was a good idea. That's a very good question. Where is a fifth film ever a good idea? My biggest worry is the alien references. Did they forget the reaction to the crystal skull?
Yeah.
I write to you in the hope that you can persuade me that I will not be massively disappointed.
Okay.
I beg your pardon, that's from Kevin, gold medalist Rotary International Swimming Match 1993. Can you reassure Kevin that about Indiana Jones?
Well, interestingly enough, Kevin, I have recently rewatched all the Indiana Jones movies as part of something that the good lady Professor Her Indoors is doing. And I have to tell you, they're not very good. They're nothing like as good as you remember. Okay. In fact, some of them are flat out bad. And so the question of whether, I mean, I know that the, you know, the Crystal Skull had people going, ooh, he sullied the memory of the previous Indiana Jones films. Well, Crystal Skull is particularly all over the place, and it does have charisma vacuum Shia LaBeouf pretending to be Marlon Brando. But the movies aren't that good. I'm sorry, we just have fonder memories of them than they deserve.
The first Indiana Jones.
Temple of Doom.
Where the Nazis are looking for the Ark of the Covenant.
Temple of Doom.
There was a great piece that Ben McIntyre wrote. He's the ace spy.
So it's not called Temple of Doom. That's the second one, isn't it? Indiana Jones. No, I get this wrong now. Temple of Doom is the second one. What's the first one called? Hang on. Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Thank you, for heaven's sake.
So it's all about the Ark of the...
Wow, I'm
Ark
old.
Ark of the Covenant. So Ben McIntyre, who's responsible for SES Rogue Heroes, he's got a great new book out called Colditz. He wrote the book which became Operation Mincemeat. You know, he's the guy.
Yeah.
And he was saying that German coup from a couple of weeks ago, which we mentioned in a previous take, because you think, you watch... Raiders of the Lost Ark is ludicrous. You know, the Nazis aren't going to be interested in... No, that's exactly
what they were. Yeah, they were.
Exactly were. They love the occult. They love all that weird stuff.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, the current coup is exactly like the, you know, stuff of old.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is probably the best.
Good film.
Temple of Doom is so problematic, it's not, you know...
Good opening sequence.
Yes, with Anything Goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which is great, which I saw in The Isle of Man in stereo... And there's a dice that rolls across the screen, which is absolutely fabulous. Last Crusade is the one with Sean Connery, which is actually not bad. Crystal Skull is all over the shop.
Ruthie, this is
Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom. Even Spielberg has a problem with Temple of Doom.
Ruthie says, of all the interviews you've conducted over the years, have you ever been starstruck? Love the pod and love you both.
Oh, you go first. You go first.
Whilst you're digesting. I'm usually not starstruck because we have... You know, it's work, and you've got like 15 minutes with a famous person, make it work. You know, so you're on. If you're meeting someone socially, I think it's far easier to get starstruck because, you know, you go, oh, hello. But actually, they have a job to do, you have a job to do, so you just get on and do it. The times when I have been, that sprung to mind when I saw the question from Ruthie, Luciano Pavarotti.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was able to call him Maestro all the way through, which was fun.
Very good.
Similarly, Jimmy Carter, American president, because I was able to say...
Jimmy Carter of Mars.
Mr. President.
Very good.
But again, you're thinking, it's Jimmy Carter. So then occasionally you're thinking, wow. So that's a bit of starstruck. Springsteen, I have to be honest, was a bit
of
starstruck.
Of course,
Springsteen. And from Five Live Days, when I interviewed three prime ministers... Gordon Brown, Tony Blair, and David Cameron.
Wow.
And they come with the office.
Yes.
And so because they come with the weight of the office, you go, wow, it's the prime. And when they step out there, they've got all these other things going on. So I think I might have been a little bit kind of, I don't know whether it's starstruck is the right word, but sort of impressed by the weight that they came in with.
Yes. Okay.
Anyone starstruck?
Yes, I can think. Can I just say very quickly, because you used the word maestro.
Yes.
Angela Badalamenti passed away this week, and who I was completely starstruck by when I interviewed him on stage in Edinburgh. And he was so charming and so lovely and so funny and such a brilliant composer. I was completely starstruck by him. The person I have been most starstruck by, and I'm not just saying this for effect, was Linda Blair, who was one of the first people... who agreed to do an interview with me when I went to America looking for interview work that I could then sell in the UK. And three people, on the basis of just being nice, gave me interviews. And they were Sam Raimi, Wes Craven, and Linda Blair. And meeting Linda Blair, who was just lovely, smart, funny, down-to-earth, intelligent, just really, really brilliant. And I spent an hour in her company, and in the whole hour, I never once got over the... It's Linda Blair. It's actually Linda Blair, actually here. And I was completely starstruck by it.
Ruthie, thank you very much. Next question, schmestion, Matthew. I think this is very much for you. My name is Matthew. I am a student studying medicine who soon hopes to become a doctor as well. However, to achieve this, I must pass my final exams. The revision period has now begun in earnest, and I have found myself listening to film soundtracks. I've found that they are the best pieces of music to listen to whilst I study. I was hoping you might be able to recommend me some of your favourite movie music, or even perhaps some film scores that you think might lend themselves particularly well to enhancing scholarly thoughts. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time and for producing such excellent podcasts every week. So this is very much you, because not only do you like this anyway, but you have your movie music show on Scala. I'm going to assume that he would quite like without words.
Yeah, without words.
So great sweeping scores.
Okay, well... because we just mentioned him, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me soundtrack, although there are a couple of songs on that, but I wrote the sleeve notes to it after I was asked to by Angelo Badalamenti, and so that's been very much in my thoughts recently. There's a brilliant composer called Askamatsu Miya who does superb film music. You can listen to her score for After Yang, which I think you might find interesting. If you listen to the soundtrack album of Drive My Car, that's kind of jazzy, and I find that very easy to write to, because I understand the thing about not having vocals on. I listen a lot to the Philip Glass opera of Akhenaten, which obviously is not a film soundtrack, although weirdly enough, excerpts from it have turned up in films. And I find that utterly compelling. And then, again, there are some songs you have to move over them, but the Local Hero soundtrack by Mark Knopfler, when I came to your house last night, you were listening to Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler's Local Hero soundtrack is just beautiful. There are a couple of songs, like there's the Jerry Rafferty song, which Jerry Rafferty specifically wrote because they needed something to be on the radio. And that's absolutely beautiful. The Silent Running soundtrack by Peter Schickele, who is better known as PDQ Bark. He was a kind of musical satirist.
Max Richter's stuff is useful for working too.
And of course, actually, in that case, Max Richter's Sleep, which is an extraordinary piece, and there is a documentary called Max Richter's Sleep. So technically, you could say that it's a soundtrack album, although the documentary is about the performing of the music. Sleep is a cycle of music that was designed to reproduce and mirror sleep cycles. And I have tried listening to it whilst asleep, which I don't say is a joke. There is a thing about sleeping through it. But it's also brilliant for working to, because it's a 6-7 hour cycle of music. And it's really calming. I mean, really, really, you know, calming and centering. What about you? Because you write more than I do.
Yes, but I've decided that I cannot write with any... I think there's a difference between writing and revision. You might be revising and you can have music on, but I find writing there means that there is hopefully a rhythm to what you're writing, and it will automatically go against the rhythm of the music that you're listening to. So, you know, even the Max Richter, the most kind of lo-fi stuff, will still have a rhythm to it.
Okay.
And I don't find that helps if you're writing in a different
rhythm.
Now is a good time to do this joke again. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
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 Philip Glass. We haven't done it for years.
Very, very good.
There are very few places where it's appropriate. Very few people understand it.
Exactly, yeah.
But you, this is the perfect place.
That Drive My Car soundtrack is Eiko Shibashi, who I think is brilliant and really well. Oh, the other thing you might, there is a really good album of film and television soundtracks by Brian Eno, which has an exciting title, which is something like Brian Eno's Film and Television Soundtracks from 1970 blah to... it's like it literally, in that very Brian Eno way, describes exactly what it is, and that, I find, is very good for working.
An interesting question from Pfizer in Bristol. If someone offer you a box of everything you've ever lost, what's the first thing you're looking for?
Oh, wow!
While you're thinking of an answer, I will share mine.
Go on.
Pfizer, thank you. I mentioned this to the good lady ceramicist, and she instantly came up with the answer, which is something that troubles me still. Okay?
Okay.
So, everything I'm going to say is true.
Okay.
We were on holiday in the aforementioned Holland a few years ago, and we were going around the Rembrandt's house is there, and you can go around, and it's obviously like a museum to the great piece, to the great artist. And we came to a section in a corridor where they had some of Rembrandt's sketches, which is sort of like brown ink on paper, sort of shadowy figures, you know, that kind of thing, like half-finished work. And she was staring at this, and I said, "So come on, we need to go." She said, "I think I've got one of these." And I said,
"Pardon?"
"Exactly. You think we have a Rembrandt sketch?" She said, "Yes." And there is a family friend of on her family's side who was a Boston art dealer and had a whole his house was full of great art. And many years ago, handed my wife a collection of things and said, "Here, see what you think of these." And we can't find them. So the answer, Pfizer, to your question is, the thing that I think I'm looking for the most is the lost Rembrandt in my house. Now, of course, it might not be. It's just that it looks very, very similar to the Rembrandt sketches in the Rembrandt house in Amsterdam. And it was given to us by an American art dealer who might have had this kind of thing around. So on a fairly regular basis now, we're thinking, have you looked in that drawer? What about that chest there? Surely in that book, maybe? So that is genuinely true. We think we might have a Rembrandt sketch somewhere in the house. Next time you come round, could you have a look?
Well, that's untoppable.
Probably is. Actually.
But if I had a box that had everything that I'd lost in it, the thing I would look for first is my faith.
In?
General.
Your faith in general. Well, if it's in a... Okay.
If it's in a box.
I stand more chance of finding my Rembrandt. No, actually, no, you, I don't know. Who knows? You look for your faith in everything.
I look for my faith and you look for Rembrandt. For your Rembrandt. See
I
who
promise
finds it
first. I will, if I do find it, I will bring it in.
And ditto.
Okay, all right. That's very good. Amanda in North Carolina, what's one of life's biggest traps that people fall into? The only thing that I can think of off the top of my head is that people look for simplicity and actually life is complicated.
Oh, that's good. Okay, I think the biggest trap that you fall into, and I refer this to a comment that you said that you had heard Wilco Johnson made on the radio, when Wilco Johnson said, I had happiness and I didn't realise it was just in the next room. And he was referring to the fact that he was thinking back to a time that he was doing an interview and his partner was in the control box. And then I am remembering this correctly, aren't I?
I'm not sure, but go on.
Wilco Johnson, you know, when he was diagnosed with his illness, and then he suddenly said...
Which was terminal cancer.
It was terminal cancer. And then actually he was made well for a lengthy period of time before we then lost him. But he said that thing about suddenly when he realised that everything was to be taken away from him, he suddenly realised what it all was. And he describes in that brilliant documentary by Julian Temple, The Ecstasy of Wilco Johnson, the extraordinary quality of suddenly realising what you have because it's about to be taken away. And that sometimes you only realise what you have because either you've lost it or because you're not going to have it forever. And this taps into the thing about, you know, more beautiful for having been broken. I think the trap that most people fall into, and I would put myself as a prime... this is not realizing what you have at the moment that you have it and not, sorry, this sounds so trite, but I mean it really seriously, not realizing just how blessed and lucky you are at the time that you are blessed and lucky. And so just take a moment to look at all the things you have. And I mean by things, I mean people generally.
The way your grandma would have said, count your blessings.
Yes, and you would have thought, yeah, thanks, grandma.
Yeah. Final question from Maria in County Neath.
I've made myself quite moved doing that. I'm really sorry.
Okay, well, let me change the mood.
Okay.
I'm now wondering if you were talking about Home Alone earlier.
Yeah.
Whether having said we've got a lost Rembrandt in the house. Now we're going to have Home Alone burglars. And I'm going to have the blowtorch to the head thing already lined up. Go away. Okay. Maria in County Neath, what's the ponciest thing you've ever eaten?
Ooh. The ponciest thing you've ever
and
eaten?
And I thought that was a good question. The thing is, I don't like poncy food.
No, me neither. There's never enough of it.
Beans on toast with Marmite and some chilli flakes is about as fancy as I get.
I once... OK, I mean, this isn't very good, but I once had a salmon mousse in a restaurant because I wanted fish, and that was what they had, was salmon mousse. And it came, and it was like a little something that tasted a bit like salmon, and all it did was remind me how much I would have enjoyed eating salmon.
If they'd actually served
salmon, as opposed to this moussey thing, which was just like, what? I don't even know what that is.
That's quite poncy.
It is poncy, yeah. And it cost like a lot of money, and, you know, and it filled none of the gaps.
Send your questions, shmestions, to correspondence@coburnandmayo.com. There's loads of things coming your way over Christmas, by the way. Loads of things.
Loads of
every
things.
Every single day. You'll turn your back and whoosh, there's another thing down.
Every time you turn your phone on.
Whoosh.
It's going to be like a new U2 album every day.
Another dump.
Except more wantable. Wanted.
Lovely.
Less unwanted.
Correct.